Dumba Zange Jumden Yawa Jaja Jaja Loja Loja Zoja Dumba Jumden Dejin Jawa Taj Zombe Zange Rigba Dan Jamzo Demba Dewara Jigba Jigden Jemba Jibon Lana meba lada menamje dumba zanje jumden de bejawa shaja dumba la endo jazo je dumba jumden de deje jawa da jumba yandan bandum shabzu demba devara jawa jeden jamba jevo dube kalo Lana meba lada menanje dumba zanje jumden de bejava shaja dumba la chudu jazo je hoi jizan jambe yanla jaze lo kange lo du tenye tenje nyenda namda razze Chinyi dungwe cheche seche nyeje doka leoban Kanda sebe zora mare mendon donye geze Chodzo gula poche daze yenla chochu yande Jukdara checho nyomo nyilong leje chacho choze Mare meze donye nyugu chini chunze reti Tune daje zanju dazu yende lunzo yazi tuvi Chuta chuta chuni kente talu mis Jambi yala du omu arabazana de Omu arabazana de Omo arabazana de omo arabazana de 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 Kadan denje jonglo do ye lo de bobe tedo se Joje me do damare ra leje nyende gembade Sanje jenla me de bewa ye Togun namda jenla je baraye joy Dumba Jenamanje Jugu Gala Genze Tendene Chedara Zamben Duja Zemba Allah Zabje Jut Charva Abdu Mendala Ganaya Dayame Je Juda Zoje Jonala Janju Padu Tane Jazoje Tage chuje jebe zonama je dola Sanje dubaraye shoye Sanje chuda zoje zonama la Chanju bandu dane jazo je Tage chuje jebe zonama Dola benje sanje dubaraye shoye Sanje chuda zoje zonama Bado dani jabzo che tage chushe jebe sonama Dola benje zanye dubaraye shoye Ladan lame medan meyanje ombo dan Jajen lazo chuche chola chava chavana Sanje sumba rado chenjen deve gyujomba Deda chige tambe chunye chenjen de chenje Namo laye kyanam ludan nujenje Dubun dadami genam dan dova kunje tanan chizamba tamje kedu tagi chudun dos.
Good morning. First thing first.
It was brought to my attention that the last video clip that I showed you was inappropriate, so I apologize for that. And my point was to show that how interpretation plays a role. So even though it is the same stimuli, but the way we perceive and interpret changes how we behave. It affects how we respond. That's what I was trying to get across. So I apologize for that. And then, how about your homework? You have forgotten that you have homework? Ken was like, really? Do we have homework? Yeah, anybody want to share? Please remember that one stanza. And then I shared some tips from Shantideva how to, you know, apply that quote in our life using those techniques. So have you tried? At least have you tried? Or completely forgotten?
Well, I'll start. This is really not from this past week. This is, you know, I recite the verses in the morning. And many years ago, I particularly thought of this one verse because of a friend of mine. This is a climbing friend, someone I had known for decades, and climbed many places with and experienced lots of things with. And he and his wife had moved out to Colorado, and I spent time with him out in Colorado. And I called him up a few years ago to say, I'm coming out. And he said, I don't want to see you. I don't want to have anything to do with you again, ever.
Oh, okay.
I had no idea what this was all about. And I was really hurt. And so I, you know, this is someone I had known for a very long time, a good friend. And, so now it's been a long time. It's been 10 or 11 years since I've seen him. And I still think of him when I recite that verse as a reminder that I don't know what it is that caused him to start to feel that way, but that, you know, I can still on my part see him as a dear friend and someone that I've experienced a lot of very good things in life with. So it was not something this week, but, you know, it's something that's a good reminder.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Well, the eight verses is something that we've had for some time here, and it's very precious and it's very important. But the thing that's new to me was the refuge, and it embedded itself.
Sorry?
It embedded
itself.
All through the day at different times. It just would come, and wow, particularly when I'm in the shower, and
That's
cleansing.
Yes.
But at all kinds of times, you know, like driving, or I'm eating, or I'm walking, or whatever, many times. And I thought, what a wonderful gift, you know, because this one, it just embeds itself. It just. And I've noticed that each time it's like, I go like this. It's like it comes. It just sets everything differently. You know, it's like a really. It just. Away from the mundane to a really peaceful type of experience. Thank you.
I think just to add on to that, so this which we did last week about this, purification practice through the three refuge. So I think that is a very good idea. I forgot to mention, you know, when you visualize, you can imagine when you go into shower, when you soap yourself, and then when you let the, you know, water run down, the way it kind of cleanse yourself. And if you want to think in a better way is, let's say if you just jumped into a mud, and then you go into the shower, and then, you know, you let the shower run over your body, the way it cleanses all that mud. So you can imagine that, you know, when you're doing that, all your negativities that which you have accumulated over many lifetimes, all that kind of cleanse the way that shower water removes all that dirt. So that's very helpful. And then also I forgot to mention one thing. So when you do refuge practice, it is advice, especially we are so-called Mahayana practitioner, it is always advisable to include all the sentient beings surrounded, you know, around you. And then when you do that visualization, the cleansing and receiving blessing, you also imagine that all that sentient being which surrounded you also received the same blessing and purification. So that's a very good, powerful way of doing the practice. Mm. Yes.
This isn't specific to the verse, but I work with a lot of nonprofits, and I received an email this week from a Christian-based nonprofit client that just had a quote at the end of the email that somehow just got to me, and it was from Mother Teresa, and it just simply said, when you judge others, you have no time to love them. And so that's just stuck with me this week, is it's made me very aware that, you know, obviously people I'm close to, I want them to be happy, and I want them to be free from suffering, but how easy it is to discriminate between different people.
Yeah,
so
okay, thank you.
That was a very helpful quote.
Yeah, sometimes you have to be very careful what you choose down there, you know. I have received emails, very nasty emails, but down there they have chosen these very nice quotes. I was like, really? You think that this is the quote you believe in, and then the way you write is completely different. So you have to be careful. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody? Yes. Sorry. Yeah.
It was this morning, and I had my prayer, and I was saying that prayer, Sadhachuta Metalong. So I decided that when, as soon as finish, I have a guest, and she grabbed an apple and she ate it, and she didn't ask me permission to eat. Then I was like, oh, she ate it without asking me. But then I said, what I am saying before, Sadhachita Medhuman, it was not. Relate to what I was reciting, aspiration, and then when she had the symbol apple, I was offering all the land and all the sanctuary. Now I am thinking about apple. Oh, she didn't ask me. So I just feel was so connected, and then I feel, oh, she's my teacher. She reminds me what I recite. She tell me you need to practice.
Yes,
so that
yes.
was really helpful to remind me what I say, decide.
Yeah, we have this tendency, isn't it? We say that all Mother Sentient Beings have happiness and causes of happiness, but then you still harbor so much anger and hatred towards some of the people as if they don't, you know, constitute that sentient being. Mm. Yeah, sometimes it's a very good reminder. Please.
It just reminded, you know, a nun once taught me, you know, she said, you know, if someone steals from you, instead of getting angry and judging, picture that you are giving the item to them. Because really, out of love, you don't want them to accumulate negative karma. And she said, so just offer it to them, and I thought that's like one of the six perfections, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfection of giving, and I thought that's it's hard to do sometimes when you're in the moment, but
Yeah. So I think in Tibetan also, I think it comes from Buddhist thinking. So when we lose something, let's say you drop your phone somewhere, and then you know it's lost. So normally our tendency is to really ruminate over it and then, you know, try it and this and this. But it's saying that, you know, the one way to think about it is, you know, maybe this is a one way to prevent bigger disaster. Just by, you know, losing something small, it may help to prevent or avert a bigger disaster. So if you're able to think that way, that's one way. The other way is, oh, whoever got it, I'm not going to get it back. Okay. You know, have it and enjoy. So that helps, you see. If you keep worrying about it, it is not going to bring back. But if you just kind of let it go, it gives you peace of mind. And then also, yeah, I think it's a it becomes a practice of generosity. Mm. So that's, you see, how we interpret things, it really changes the whole situation. So that's why it's very important, yeah. That's why we discuss meditation is all about that, to create that gap, create that awareness. Normally, when there is a, what do you call it, incident or stimuli, we just react. There is no thinking. But through meditation, we are able to create that gap. Then you have the choice whether, first of all, whether to respond or not. Secondly, how you want to respond. So that's what we are trying to gain eventually, to be able to do that. At the moment, yeah, we are on automatic mode. Something comes, we react. That's it. And then later, oh, I should not have done that. I shouldn't have done that. That's too late. Mm. You want to say? Yeah, please.
I was carrying the quote around with me in my purse because I have many friends and people come to me with problems or, you know, that they know that I'll always listen. And I don't know how many times I read that quote this week. To be honest. Mm. It just helped reshape their thoughts because it's just so clear and precise, but it just makes them think and reprocess instead of having so much anger towards the situation to figure out, you know, what they can take from it to be like, more peaceful and healthy with the situation as opposed to just having anger.
And, okay. Thank you.
The teaching is that we receive from people who are positive, that life is, you know.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Anyone?
I talk to you about that, and like, I'm just listening to this echo of this guy with his name T, you know. I find that, how do I use somebody that's so obnoxiously contaminated that how do I really work with that? And two things arose, and that is that I've been able to experience equanimity and with friends, strangers, and But I had a difficult time in the post-meditative when you come out of, and you know, it's supposed to spill over into your perception. The other thing is that if you distinguish between the person and their actions, then it's perfectly acceptable to have indignation towards their behaviors, but to still see them that they have the same nature. They want suffer. They want to be suffering and want to be happy. So you can still see that other side of it. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Rinpoche, is that when it says teacher, I'm wondering, you know, being taught that we have our inner teacher, is this external person or event or whatever it is, are they teaching our inner teacher to recognize it, or are we actually seeing them as an objective teacher that's trying to teach us something, you know? I wanted to know if there was any distinction.
So according to this stanza, it's like instead of viewing the other person who is inflicting harm or who is causing harm to you, instead of looking, perceiving that person as an enemy, somebody that you have to, somebody whom you develop aversion or hatred towards or against that person, but instead we should look for somebody who is helping you in your spiritual path, because of that person you had the opportunity to practice patience. Without that person, so you are actually looking at the person being kind, you know, because of this you are able to kind of progress in your spiritual journey. So without that, so it's just viewing that person as a teacher in our conventional sense, one who teaches you, you know, the right way. Yeah. But of course, internal teacher, yeah, I don't know whether there is a term. But then, of course, from the Buddhist, we talk about guru and all, that's different. That's something who shows you the path and all that. That is not just that, you know, somebody teaches you and you listen, but it's all your attitude. Whether you take that as your teacher or not. But in the Lamrim text, it says you have to investigate. You have to examine the teacher for years before you really take that person as a teacher. Because once you have taken that as your teacher, then there are certain practices that you have to follow. So that's why we have to be very careful, you know, who you take somebody as your teacher. Sometimes, you know, when people, some people were very charismatic, very good at, you know, articulation, then you just all kind of develop some liking, and then you think that, oh, that is my guru, you know. And you take it, and then later, you know, over the years, you developed, I mean, you come across this and this and that. And then if you started criticizing or seeing the fault, then it's not good for you. So that's why before you take, even if you are sitting here, you don't have to take me as your teacher, you know. You're just attending a lecture. I don't expect you to take me as teacher. So you can kind of, you know, make your take your time. And then, yeah, if you really feel that, you know, that person is right or worthy to be, has the qualifications to be a teacher, then, yeah, you can consider. So now, of course, there are very conservative view and very liberal view. The conservative view is, as long as you listen to one stanza, that becomes your teacher or your guru. But the conservative, the liberal view is that no, it's up to you. You first, you know, you can go and take, but your attitude is that you're not taking that person as your teacher or guru yet. So you, over the years, you would kind of examine the person and then whether it is worthy of taking it as the person as your guru. Yeah, so that's the, my approach is the liberal approach. So I also want you to adopt that approach. So that's better. That's better for both of you and us. So you, I'm not your guru or anything. So we are just friends at the moment. Yeah.
At some point, I don't want to sidetrack this, but at some point, could you talk a little bit about the teacher-student relationship? Particularly in the West, it's very problematic.
Yes,
so
yes.
At some point, maybe you could talk to
us about sure. That. Sure. Of course, in Lamrim, so the first chapter is on guru devotion. So that is like the root of the path, you know. But I didn't want to discuss that, because this is not something the culture is familiar with. So there's a lot of this, you see, you have to respect me, you have to respect your teacher, you have to do this, you have to do that. So I thought that I will just begin with the other topics, and then, you know, later kind of, you know, go into that. So that's the reason. Yeah, so maybe, yeah, next series, maybe we can begin with that. Anyone? Okay, so for this week's homework, I think it's the same one. So you try to apply that very stanza. I think we have so many opportunities, you know, especially in your family, your children, your wife, your spouse, your husband, your brother, your sister. These are the ones, you know, really you can apply this stanza to. Because especially your children, you have nursed them, you have nurtured them from so young and all this. Now when they are this thing, they started to, answer back. And then they become rebellious. And you're like, you know, I don't deserve that, you know. I do not expect this from you, you know. I can understand if somebody else says that to me, but not you, you see. This is exactly relevant to these people. So I am sure that there's a lot of, you know, situations where you can apply that, but we don't remember to apply. So please continue with this, and then, yeah, next week we will.
I have something I want to say. One time I was taking, my son is 31, and when he was a little bit younger, and I was taking him, he lives in New York, and I was taking him back to the airport. And I was saying, oh, you're my teacher of patience. And he said, What did I do wrong?
Yeah. Yeah, that was very good. That was, yeah. Mm. So anybody wants to say anything? No? Okay, so let's then talk about karma, which is a very, very common term now. It even appears in, of course, it's already in the dictionary, and very often you even hear in the movies, karma has become now a universal term. So you can see here, karma, the root of all well-being. Sometimes it is called as the foundation of all good qualities. So in Buddhism, this is so important. Karma is one concept that differentiates Buddhism from non-Buddhism?
Buddhist.
Non-Buddhist. Or the how do you put it? Non-Buddhist, yeah. So other religion, yeah. Mm. So what is karma? What is your understanding of karma?
Action.
Mm-hmm.
Actions that you take, responses, thoughts.
Yeah. Speech. Yeah. So remember why we are talking about karma is, remember we started with precious human rebirth, then we talk about refuge, and now this one. So in Lamrim there is a progressive stage. You know, first you have to, I think I mentioned this earlier. So there are, Buddha taught 84 volumes, we call it, volumes of teachings. And then in monastery we study into different topics. But Lama Tsongkhapa collaborated everything, consolidated all this in a framework for one person to get to enlightenment. So when you read, normally when you read a commentary, there is not that clear the framework, the stages. But Lama Tsongkhapa very concisely consolidated all that Buddha's teaching, commentary, everything into a framework so that we just need to follow. But of course, you have to follow in stages. So in order to get there, you need to first be on that. It's like the ladder. In order to climb up, you need to climb the lower rings. Otherwise, no way you can, you know. And like foundation, like if you wanted to build a house, three-story, four-story, if your foundation is not stable, you may try to build it. You may try to, you know, build three stories, but it won't be stable. So that's why there are stages. Once you have to first come to that stage, from there you have to go there and then slowly, slowly progress. So last week we talked about refuge. And refuge, we also discussed that it's not just about, you know, asking Buddha to bless and then, you know, Buddha just kind of liberate us. It is not. How Buddha save us, how Buddha help us is through teaching. That's why Buddha, we as a teacher, we view Buddha as a teacher. And then Buddha's teaching, which is Dharma, as the actual refuge. Because if you follow the Buddha's teaching, then, yeah, you will be able to liberate. So in other religion, it's more of like, you know, you pray to God, and that's it, you know. The God has the power to bring you up or throw you down. But in Buddhism, it is all about you. That means you are your own savior, and you are also your own enemy. Because if you practice, then, yeah, you save yourself. But if you do not practice, and if you just kind of ignore this law and cause, the instruction of karma, then, yeah, you are your worst enemy, because of this, it will bring you to unfavorable. It will give you all kinds of unpleasantness, suffering, pain. So, since we have to, so it says, Shin and Yandu may ye deng member, te in jigyo kunjo sum to ne, te jir cham do shin to temba tang, te labja nyamba member cha. Te yang kana lende lexambe, lando sujin dubla rale soos. So it says that after you take refuge, you have to follow the instructions of the true refuge. So that is to follow karma, to engage in those actions that need to be cultivated and then disengage or abandon those actions that brings you suffering. So this is so important. So why we are having all these problems? Why there's a lot of suffering, pain, dissatisfaction? It's all because we do not have the conviction in the karma, in the concept of karma. So it is like minefield. Do you call that minefield? Landmine. So if you are in a landmine, what would you do? You would be very careful. You will make sure that you are not stepping on those landmines, yeah. So that is because you have the conviction that the landmine can blow you into pieces. That's why you're really careful. So if we really have this conviction in karma, then we will never ever engage in negative actions. Because we know that negative action brings up or give rise to suffering. And also we have this conviction that the virtuous actions give rise to happiness and all the favorable results. We will put effort in cultivating those. Right now, we have some understanding of what karma is, how karma works. That is really superficial. So this is all about developing this conviction trust. The trust at the conviction level in the karma. So that's why it's very important. Imagine if you really have this conviction, your life will be different. Really different, the way you live, the way you respond to people, the way you interact with other people, completely different. So in order to develop that, we need to understand first what is karma, and then how karma works, what are the results if you engage in this, and what kind of, what are the negative karmas. So we need to understand that. Once we have the understanding, then through repeated contemplation, through repeated reflection and meditation, then we develop this conviction. And that's when you are able to develop that conviction. Then, you can say that. If you are able to have that, actually you have control over, the future, kind of future. Then from there, you are already on that path. Then you can develop, and there is no way you will go down. You will always go forward. So that's why in Buddhism, there's so much emphasis on karma. So now, what is karma? So normally there is this. Can you make it softer?
Yeah.
have one more. So that's the general understanding of karma. What goes round, comes round. In Tibetan, we have something called Sampa Nyamba Mila Chena, Jowal Subu Rangla Koyons. So it means if you inflict harm with ill intention, then yeah, you will experience this kind of result.
Talk about the popularity of the term. John Lennon called instant karma. Immediately from the
action. Yeah, you know, yeah. So if you search on YouTube, you will see under this instant karma. So this is mainly the road rage.
Right.
So yeah, we get the gist of it. It is actually, yeah, if you... So karma, yes, who was it? Somebody said that it's action. Karma literally means action. So it's all about your action. So if you create something, then there will be a corresponding result. You will experience, there will be a consequences. So of course, from the Buddhist point of view, when we talk about karma, you need to have some understanding, or at least some, what do you call, faith in the reincarnations, and also life before this, and also life after this. Without that, we cannot talk about karma. So that's why the scientists and psychologists are struggling. There are many issues they cannot explain, because they are trying to explain everything in this lifetime. So there is this famous debate, nature versus nurture. Are you familiar with this? In psychology, it's a huge one. You know, how we behave, our personality, our behavior. So there are two schools of thought. One would argue that it's all about nature. It's all about, you know, our inheritance. It's all about genes. We are born with that. We are wired with that. Then we will become that kind of person. So it's like everything is blaming on our genes. And then another school of thought argues that no, it is all about the external influence, your environment, how you are brought up. That makes the difference. That's how, you know, shape your personality, your behavior. So this debate has been going on for a long time. And now they have this agreement that, yeah, it's not just, you know, nurture on alone, it's not nature alone. Or there's two interaction, there's 50-50, you know, both plays a role. But then you cannot explain. Let's say a twin. So they are born in the same family. They are fraternity twin, and then what was the other one?
Identical.
Identical twins, especially identical twins. So they have same gene. And they are brought up in the same family, same environment. They sent to the same school, but then completely different personality. One compassionate, soft person, but another one aggressive and all that. So how do you explain? Nature, nurture. So they say, oh, there is something interaction between this, something to do with. But from Buddhist point of view, it's so easy. It's karma. So when you have karma, can be only explained when you subscribe to the concept of past life, when you subscribe to the concept of rebirth, the next life. So we need to have that as a basis, and then yeah, we can talk about karma. Otherwise, what will happen is, yeah, we see so many cases. How come I have lived a very ethical life. I don't remember doing anything, you know, unethical, any negative actions. But how come I suffer? That's why I said that many of the cancer patients, the first thing is, why me? Why me? But I was told that by hospice volunteers, when it comes to HIV patients, there is less of that. Because some of them, they know where they got that sickness. So there is kind of acceptance. They know the cause. But the cancer patients, they always ask, why me? I go to church every Sunday. How come? And then we also have, how come, you know, that person, he has been conning people, deceiving people all his life, and how come he's so successful? And here I am, you know, really following the Dharma, and then here I'm struggling. And then especially Tibetan people, we do wealth puja. When you say that there's a puja or initiation regarding the wealth deity, Tibetan people will love to go. That's why we have puja called Yangdup. But look at Bill Gates and all that. They don't do wealth puja, but they are billionaire. And it's all karma. So if you don't understand the karma from that kind of broad perspective, then you will find yourself in a situation that, oh, I don't think, you know, there is such thing as karma. So what normally the Buddhist explanation is, yes, that person has lived an unethical life in this life, but he may have, you know, created some good karma in his past life. Now he is experiencing that. And then, of course, it's like using up your bank balance. Instead of, you know, every month depositing, you are just withdrawing and withdrawing, withdrawing, and there will come a time where your bank balance shows zero. That's when, yeah, people will start to experience that result. So that's I wanted to stress on this, because this is very important. Many people come to Buddhism, they like the idea of karma, and then they practice for a while, they try their best very sincerely, and then something bad happens, like, no, there's no karma. I don't want to be a Buddhist, because I did this according to this thing, and I shouldn't be, you know, experiencing this, but I'm having this. Why? There's no karma. So that's why we have to understand that. So in Lamrim, the karma topic is such a huge topic. It is explained with different subheadings. So we will focus on some of the points. We won't be able to cover all. So what we are going to cover, what we are going to discuss on, first we are going to talk about the general characteristic of karma, and then we are going to discuss on the actual non-virtuous parts, and then distinguishing heavy and light karma, and then finally we end up with the presentation of the results. So now, what are the characteristics of karma? Anybody want to volunteer?
Actions bring results.
Yeah, how many characteristics generally in Lamrim?
Are you talking about the
general character? No, general character. There are, okay, let me give you a clue. There are four.
Four.
Yeah. Wow, so clever. Yeah.
Not experiencing the effects of actions that you did not do with the action you had.
Yeah, these are the four characteristics. So this is very important. So if you really have the understanding at the conviction level, I'm talking about conviction level, we all have some understanding, intellectual understanding, but we need to bring that to the conviction level. Only then it will start to produce some result. Otherwise, no. So what is the first one? The certainty of karma. I'm supposed to bring my notes, yeah? And you know what I did? I brought the M blank ones and left the rest there. So let's see whether how much I can recall. It's okay. I think you won't be able to find it. I don't know where I put it. Yeah. So certainty of karma. What happened to my... Oh, I see. Okay. So yeah, four. Certainty of karma. And then the magnification of karma. And then if an action is not performed, its result will not be met. And then actions that are done do not perish. So don't worry, we will cover each one so you will have time to write down. So the first, the certainty of karma. So to illustrate that, it's from the conventional sense. So what is this? Seeds, the chili seeds. And what will chili seed will produce? Chili, a spicy, hot. And what is this? That I don't expect you to. No, I was also like, really? This is supposed to be the seed of strawberries. And what is the corresponding result? Strawberries, something sweet. So basically, this idea of certainty of karma is that, first of all, in Buddhism, everything comes about from a cause. There is no such thing. Nothing comes about without a cause. That cause also, it has to be concordant. So concordant means it has to correspond. The cause has to correspond with the result. So like here, from the chili seed, it can only produce chili. We cannot expect. We plant some chili seeds. Chili seed is maybe it's cheap. And you say, okay, I want to, you know, enjoy some strawberries. And if you started to plant some chili seeds, it's not going to produce. In order to produce strawberry, you need to plant the seed of strawberry. So likewise, this is, you know, the what you call the external cause and conditions. So if in external cause of conditions, if it requires the causes and effect to correspond, then of course, when it comes to internal, it's the same. So here the idea is that in order to produce happiness, you need to plant or create virtuous action. There is no way that, you know, you create a negative action and expect for a favorable outcome, a happy outcome. So this is the gist of what when we say certainty of karma. Most of us, we normally look the other way. We all want happiness. We all want to avoid unhappiness. But then, what do? We do the opposite. That's why Shantideva says, "Tunye dondu semyo jang, tunye nila ngomba ju. Tewan do jang timube rangi tewa tadanjong." I have quoted that before in our first class. So this kind of captures, you know, our habit. Even though we really desire for happiness and we really want to avoid unhappiness, but it was like we are running towards the suffering. So nobody wants to run towards suffering. Nobody wants to experience. But here when Shantideva said, because we don't know, we are ignorant of the causes. Even though we wish for happiness, but we continuously engage in negative actions, which results in unhappiness. And likewise, even though we wish happiness, no, we do not wish to experience suffering, but we continuously engage in non-virtuous actions. That's why we end up, we think, how come, you know, I want to have this, but always we end up with something else. So that's how karma works. So if you really want, from this point, what you can take in is, if we really want to be happy, then create the causes of happiness. There is no other way. There's no other way. Likewise, if we do not wish to experience unhappiness, dissatisfaction, whatever it is, then do not create the cause. If you put an end to the cause, then, yeah, of course it will not happen. So that is the main point here, certainty of karma. And in the Lamrim, there is this famous story about, a famous story of Nyemba Sangden. Have you heard of this story? Who has this enchanting voice? Oh, that's a very common story. Okay. So this is to illustrate this point. So during Buddha's time, there was this monk called Nyemba Sangden, and who has this such an enchanting voice. When that person sings, it's like everybody stops. Such a melodious voice, such a great singing voice. But appearance, the look, is very repulsive, so ugly. So the disciples asked Buddha, how come? Why is that so? So Buddha explained, many years ago, not many years, hundreds of years, or during other Buddha's time, what happened was, at that time, the king was constructing a stupa, big stupa, and he was part of the labor team there. And when he found out that they are planning to build such a huge stupa, he kind of developed a negative attitude. Why do they need such a huge stupa, you know? It will never complete. That kind of attitude. He kind of criticized that whole thing. But then, yeah, once it was completed, it turned out to be a magnificent stupa. And he kind of regretted what he said, and then he made an offering. He bought a bell, small bell, to adorn the stupa. You will see that some of the stupas, they have these bells. It's like the wind chime, you know, you have this one. So he offered that. So that's why it's the result. Because of his criticism of the stage, of the stupa, so he was born with that kind of look, repulsive look. Whereas after regret, he made that offering, which produced a very nice sound. He developed a very enchanting voice. So this is to show that you see how these two different karmas can produce different results. So there's no way that he did the repulse, that criticism can, you know, bring about his enchanting voice. It is not. It has to correspond. So that's the point. The second one is magnification of karma. So this one, just to give you an idea. What do you think this is? This is a mango tree. You can see so huge. And it can really provide shelter to many people. If you gather in India, it's common, especially in village. When they have their what is called panchayat, or their meeting in the village, they normally sit under this. And in monastery, we have a debate between the our classes, immediate class, the one above us and one below us. So there's a very competitive debate. It's an annual thing. So we really prepare for that. So in order to prepare for this, we go as far as possible. In monastery, all the buildings are really closely built. So you have to be keep it secret. They don't want your other classes to know on which topic our class is going to debate on. Otherwise, they can, you know, read all that and then come well prepared. And then, yeah, we won't be able to really give them a hard time. So we used to go into the nearby field, which has all this. And then it's very funny. We also assign people as a lookout. So they will be stationed, you know, see whether anybody coming to, you know, listen to what we are discussing. So yeah, it was so pleasant. It can really provide shade for, like, when we started our class, it was like 200 students in one class. So all that huge banyan tree or the mango tree came from just this one. So in external cause and condition, you can see that something small like this can produce such a huge result. And this is not just this one. Year after year, it produces how many mangoes? So likewise, when it comes to internal cause and condition, it's same. You think that, oh, you know, I have created only just a small negative action. But if you just ignore that, it multiplies. Here it's about multiplying. It increases. So even though the first, when you committed the action, it may be an action that can maybe result into something very small consequences. But if you leave it there, it increases, and then it will become a heavy karma. So that's why we have this saying, Kebe diwa chi yang yang, lumbu diwa yang yang chis. So those wise people, because when they create negative karma, because they are wise, they created it knowingly. So when it was produced, it was heavy because you did it knowingly. And whereas those fools or those who are ignorant of, you know, how karma works, so when they engage in negative activities, at first it is light because they are ignorant about it. They didn't know about it. So it's light. But then it changes. What happened is those wise ones, they know that karma, if you don't purify, it multiplies. So they do the practice of purification. Because of that, it started off with the heavy, but because of the purification practice, it becomes lighter. It becomes light. Whereas for the full one, they don't know about this, the magnification of this karma. So they just ignore it. And what happens? Eventually, it becomes heavier and heavier. So that is why we should not just ignore tiny negative actions. You may think that, oh, just killing an insect, like mosquito, is okay. It's not okay. If you don't purify, if you don't practice what is called shangpa, I think it's purification, then it multiplies and it becomes consequences becomes heavy. Likewise, you should not think that, oh, this is such a trivial, you know, positive actions, trivial virtue, I don't want to do it. No, even a trivial one, it accumulates. It's like the, if you put a container under a drop of water, if there is a drop coming from some tank there, and if you put a pail under it, even though it's just one drop, but after a while, it fills up. So you should not just, you know, take it kind of a relaxed kind of attitude. You should, even if it's a tiny or trivial act of virtue, you still should put effort in doing that. And there's a story, so we are going to break a bit later, yeah? So there's this story. So Lamrim, there's a lot of stories. So these stories help us to develop this conviction. So there's this story about a young boy who was born. When he was born, his fist was closed. When the parents opened it, a gold coin drops. So there was continuous gold coin. So it was asked, Buddha was, you know, the question was put forth to Buddha. What is the karmic connection? So Buddha explained, one time during another Buddha's time, this boy was a woodcutter. He lives as a, you know, woodcutter. He goes to the jungle, cuts wood and sells. He lives on a meager earning. Then he heard that one day that, you know, the rich family has invited Buddha and his followers for a meal. So he has saved a little bit of money from his earning, from his hard work. So he really rejoiced that, you know, it is so great that, you know, these people made offering to Buddha and Buddha's followers. He made prayers that in future I'll be able to make this kind of offerings to Buddha and Buddha's, Buddha and Sangha. And from that coin, he has saved one coin or whatever it is. With that pure heart, he made that offering to Buddha and made prayers to be, you know, able to practice Dharma in his future life. So because of that, as a result of that tiny act, he did not offer billions of dollars. He just offered whatever, or maybe, I don't know, $1 or something. But because he offered with his, from his heart. And that's why life after life, he had no difficulty when it comes to money. Of course, in today's time, if you talk about boy with a gold coin, you know, dropping from the hand, people won't be, you know, that impressed. They'll say, oh, it's a fairy tales. But look at this. Warren Buffett, Bill Gates. They started to make money at the age of 13. Like Warren Buffett, he is 70 billion worth, his net worth. And Bill Gates, 85.7 billion. He also started at age 13. So you see, these people, even though, yeah, there's no gold coin dropping from their hand, but whatever they do, you see, they are very, what do you call, easy for them to make money. So of course, we don't know. If Buddha were here and if you ask, why, you know, why Warren Buffett can, you know, roll his money so easily? Why Bill Gates can make a lot of money? Maybe there is a, you know, some in one of those ways, maybe, yeah, that is the result, but we don't know. But even though, yeah, what I'm trying to get to is that, you know, in this era, if you talk about, you know, gold coin dropping from your hand, yeah, it is not convincing. But here, some people you know, yeah, and they work so hard, they do a lot of these things, but they are not successful. But others, they are very successful. They started from, I don't know what amount of money they started. But they're able to churn the money, roll the money so easily. It comes so easily. So these are also, you know, maybe one of those
tiny acts of generosity. In Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, all this, you can see that even now, how much they are giving to charity. Every month they are, not every, every year they are giving billions and billions. From that you can see, oh yeah, I can understand why, you know, they are doing so well, because they are spending. We have a phrase in Tibetan. But you have to spend in order to have something in return. So you see there, it is these people, to me, is like they have made the right prayers, right dedication, to be able to practice generosity throughout their lifetime. And we also know some billionaires, they hardly engage in charity and all that giving. So these may be, you know, one time they may be, and they may have engaged in act of generosity, but they did not kind of include that prayer to be generous throughout their lifetime, throughout many lives. So there can be a difference. Anyway, the point is that not to ignore. So we will discuss this later, but just here I will just mention briefly. So it is very important to every night or every day do prostrations and kind of confess or kind of do purification. Whatever I have negative actions that I have committed today, and then I say, may it all be purified. So in this way, you are able to prevent the multiplication or the increase, the process of magnifying your negative actions. So that's a good practice. So that's why many do that. Morning they will do three prostrations. Before going to bed they will do three prostrations. These have reasons for that. Okay, so we will stop here for the break. So engross. Okay, let's continue. So that's, we just covered the second characteristics. So now, the third one. So, have you come across phrases like, wow, it's a miracle, you know, that person, you know, escaped death. There's a lot of what you call the miracle escape. Have you come across any of those? Like this one. This is a sole survivor of a Yemeni jet. And when the plane crashed into the sea, I think, and she managed to hang on to a piece of, flight, what do you call it? Yeah, something floating there. So she managed to hang on it, and for, I think, 6 or 9 hours, she kind of hanged on it, and then, yeah, she was rescued. So all died, only her. So normally what would we say? It's a miracle. But from Buddhist point of view, it's karma. If an action is performed, its result will not be met. So if this girl has not created the karma to be alive, then yeah, she wouldn't be. Those who died, they have the karma to die. So there's nothing miracle here. It's all about one's karma. And then this story.
Late Friday night, a man living in this neighborhood outside of Salt Lake City hears a crash. He looks outside his door and sees nothing. What he doesn't know, a car has skidded off the road and is now partially submerged in the Spanish Fork River. It takes until noontime Saturday for the car to be spotted. A local fisherman sees the overturned vehicle in the water.
The witness said that there was an arm that he could see inside the vehicle.
The fisherman calls 911. Spanish Fork police officers respond and wade out to the car.
Felt like I could hear somebody telling me I need help. It was very surreal. Something that I felt like I could hear.
They're not sure where the voice came from. When they get to the car, the scene is grim. 25-year-old Lynn Jennifer Grosbeck is dead in the driver's seat. But in the back seat, rescuers find her daughter Lily, just 18 months old. Lily is in her car seat, hanging upside down, in a part of the car not submerged in the water. The toddler is unconscious and unresponsive, but alive. The officers flip the car over.
Grabbed the baby in my arm, raised its head up out of the water.
So for 14 hours, the baby was hang upside down in the cold night, but she didn't die. Those who have no idea of karma will say, oh, it's a miracle. Then there's another one. This happened in India. Baby survived. What are the odds? The parents were thrown off the bike, but the bike still moved on, but it did not hit any vehicle, and still there was no crash. Of course the bike fell, but the baby was alive. So these are also examples. If you have not created the karma to experience a particular consequences, then you will not. Some people jump off from buildings to kill themselves, but they're still alive. And then in Tibetan, there's this, we have this Tibetan, I don't know, we have this Por Naza. It's a, they, and in the West, I think it's more like considered as gastric problem. So there are many stories. They say, oh, if you go to those hot spring, you will be cured. And some people get cured. And then even there are this repulsive idea that, you know, if you drink kerosene, you will be cured. And people were cured. And then say, oh, you have to do prostrations to Bodh Gaya. If you do 100,000 prostrations, you will be cured. There are people who are cured from that. You see, why is it that some people get cured, some people do not? Because when your karma, there is this karma to be cured at that time, when you are able to exhaust that karma, then any condition, when you are met with specific conditions, you get cured. So this is also coming back to karma. If you have no karma to be cured from that illness, no matter what you try, you can go to all the hot springs in the world, you will not be cured. You can do, but it is prostration, maybe there is an explanation. Yeah, if you do more, is there's a likelihood because you are purifying the negativity that is causing this. But other, if you drink gallons of kerosene, no, it's not going to cure you. But if you have the karma to be cured, no matter, you know, you do something else, yeah, you get cured. So this is very important to understand. So when we are met with adversities in our life, all kind of, you know, when we are, what do you call, met challenges, life challenges, when we lose our loved ones, when we lose material gains, anything that unpleasant, we encounter unpleasant experiences. If we have this understanding that nothing happens without our karma, then it is easier for us to accept the situation. Once we have the acceptance, then we can move on. Most of the time, remember terminally ill people, there are these stages. Many people get stuck at the denial stage. Why me? So when you are at that stage, denial stage, then you cannot move forward. You are stuck there. But when you have this understanding of karma, it's much, much easier. That's why I mentioned earlier that in Tibetan community, depression is not so common. Prolonged grief is not so common. Tibetan people also lose loved ones all the time. But you don't see people, you know, grieving for long periods of time. People just get back to their life because they have this understanding of karma. We will always say, oh, it's my karma. Of course, there's this danger. Sometimes they have this naive view that, oh, it's like, it's karma, nothing, I can do nothing about it. That is not the case. Yes, what you're experiencing is karma, but you can still do something about it. So when you are, there are people, you know, who are diagnosed with cancer, but through purification practice, they're able to cure themselves. They are living for years now. These, yeah, you can purify those negativities, which is, you know, continuing this sickness. So it is good to accept that it is your karma, but not just blame on karma and do nothing. You still can do, it is my karma, therefore I can do something about it. If I engage or practice in purification, there is something I can do about it. I can put an, stop to this continuation of my experience. So this is very important. And then finally, we have this, actions that are done do not perish. So once we have created a karma, there is no way that, you know, it will kind of disappear or it will just vanish by itself. There is no such thing. It may take time. You may create a karma this life, but of course it won't experience in this very life. You may experience the next life or next life. Or it may not experience many lifetimes, but it doesn't mean that that karma has disappeared. It is still there. When the cause and conditions come together, you already have created the cause. When the conditions come together, then you will experience it. So that's why we have to engage, or we have to engage in the practice of purification so that we can prevent the result from bringing out. No, we can prevent the cause from bringing out the result. So there is this another famous story about Nagarjuna and his karma. Have you heard of this story? But everybody knows Nagarjuna, yeah? So Nagarjuna is one of the Indian scholars we call Pandit, who is like the trailblazer of Madhyamika philosophy. When Buddha passed away, so there is a lot of confusion. And Nagarjuna was like the second Buddha who clarified, who illuminated the Madhyamika view. So Nagarjuna is considered as, you know, already at one who has achieved some level, already have high level of realizations. But Nagarjuna was also subject to karma. So this story is about how Nagarjuna died. Of course, from the in Buddhist stories, there are stories where the Maras are always trying to destroy Dharma. So it is said that the Mara, when they couldn't really harm him directly, so they kind of took a form of a son of a king. And then when the son was maybe 13, 14 in his teenagers, the mother made him a nice kind of dress. And the son said, oh, I will wear this when I, during on my coronation, when I become the king. And the mother said, no, this will never happen because your father's life span is equal to Nagarjuna, and Nagarjuna will live for many years. So unless Nagarjuna dies, your father won't die. So there is no way you can become, you know, no way he can abdicate his throne and you can become a king. There is no way. And then son said, oh, in that case, I am going to beg Nagarjuna's head. Knowing that Nagarjuna is a bodhisattva and they are happy to engage in general practice of generosity, the son, because he is, remember, he is the, I won't say emanation, he is this like the devil, Mara. So he went to ask for Nagarjuna's head. As with all bodhisattvas, they are more than happy. They said that when they hear, bodhisattvas at that level, when they hear that people asking to do something, it is like, you know, those who have achieved that kind of, what do you call, calmness, peaceful joy, they were filled with that. Just hearing that people asking for something, they are more than happy to. So yeah, Nagarjuna agreed to give his head. And so the boy tried to, came with a sword. And Nagarjuna said, no, your sword won't work on me. You won't be able to cut my head with a nick. But what you can do is, you can do it with a grass, piece of grass. Because I said that many lifetimes, lifetimes in the past, while cutting a grass, I beheaded an ant. So that karma, I said, I still have to experience that. So the prince used the grass, and yeah, it got cut. Of course, still the story goes on to say that even though they cut it, but it later joined together, and Nagarjuna lived for another, I don't know, many years. But the point is that actions that are done do not perish. Nagarjuna has created this karma, so he had to experience. So either you purify, or you have to experience that. So these stories are to help us generate faith. and conviction. So this is about these four characteristics of karma. So if you really think through each characteristics, so there is a very powerful application. So the first one, when we say that karma is certain, so that means that will motivate you to engage in virtuous action and stop you from engaging in negative actions, because we want to experience favorable results. We don't want to experience any unpleasant results. So if that is the case, then we have to cultivate the right course, the correct course. And then the second one, the magnification. When you understand that, of course, we are habituated. We are all the time under the influence of delusion. So many times, even though we try our best, we end up engaging in negativities. So with the second understanding, we can do purification on daily basis so that we can stop the magnification of these karmas. And then third one, when you think of this, and when things didn't go your way or things fell short of your expectation, when you befall with all these misfortunes, you are able to accept more easily, and that will help you. And then third one, actions that are done do not perish. That will also encourage you to engage in purification practice. So these are the, yeah, that's the application, how you can apply. So as I've been reminding you almost every session, that it is very important to try your best to put them into practice, what little you know. It doesn't matter whether you know a lot or not. The important part is to try your best to put them into practice as much as you can. If you do that, then that will bring changes in your life. It will start producing happiness in this life, as well as it will prepare for the next life. Whereas if you just come here, I mentioned to you that I really appreciate your consistency. I know that you have zillion things to do on Sunday, but you still chose to come here. So that's really good. I really appreciate that. But then if you just come here, listen, go back, then yeah, you can gain some knowledge. There is some imprint. But that's all it. But if you try to apply in your life, then yeah, it is worth, you know, prioritizing attending this class over other things. So that's why I wanted to keep reminding you. So you have to forgive me if it is like, again, you know. Yeah. Sometimes it helps. Sometimes we forget. And then another application, maybe that's a practical application. Sometimes, you know, we feel indignation. We feel that, oh, it's not fair, life is not fair, you know. I want to get even with this and that person. And the advice is, sorry. No, sorry. That was, so this is also but the other point that I'm getting across is when you feel the indignation, keep calm and let karma finish it. No need to do anything about it. And karma will do. And as here, karma has no menu. You get served what you deserve. So you don't have to be the, what we call the disciplinarian. So just let karma do its work. and don't lose your calm, peace of mind over this. There is already something is in process. Yeah, that's for today, and then we will pick up from next week. Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes.
In terms of purification and all those basic, you know, four characteristics, I'm reminded that Lama Zopa talks about Akisha.
Mm.
And he says, so we have this, you know, Arya, enlightened being, Akisha. And he says that in order to constantly be reminded, and he was reminded all the time of how you can always some kind of negative thing you could be doing, and if you didn't purify it, it could build up. And he said, no matter what Akisha was doing, if he was riding his horse through town and he realized he committed karma, he would stop his
horse, you are right.
Down purified.
Yeah, you are right.
He didn't want to take a chance there.
Mm.
All my great achievements here would
be yes. Yes, yeah, that's what Lama Adisha used to do. So even when he's traveling and when he realized that he has transgressed something, then, yeah, he would, while, of course, those days, yeah, you have to ride a horse. So he would stop and climb down and then, yeah, do purification. So if high realized being like Adisha has to do it, then why not us, you know, ordinary being? Yeah. Yes.
How would you recommend, you know, for us to do a purification at the time?
Mm. Yeah. My plan is to cover that later. Once we cover the karma topic, then we will talk about the purification practice. So if you can hold on.
Don't do anything negative.
Yeah, that's the good advice. Don't do any negative before you know the remedy. Yeah, basically, yeah, you just do prostration is good enough. We will talk in detail, but just offer morning, evening, do prostration. So when you do morning, all the nighttime, whatever negativity you have committed, just may all that be purified. And then evening, when you before going to bed, if you do prostration, then during that whole day, whatever negativity you have committed, then yeah, make prostrations to purify that. Mm. Or any comments? It doesn't have to be a question. You can comment.
Also, the meditation of the
refuge. Yes, definitely, definitely. Yeah, we have already done the refuge practice. So you can do that on a daily basis. So that's already a purification. Mm.
So I was just thinking about, I might be just naive, or, you know, when we're talking about karma and so the illnesses and, you know, like, about taking medications. So, sometimes in Tibetan, it's a karma, so... you know, it wouldn't make any difference. But I know sometimes preventives are important.
Yes. Things. Yes.
So I just came to my mind both the actions of, you know, taking the medication.
Yeah. I mean, that's very naive view, isn't it? Oh, is everything is karma? I don't have to do anything. That's not what Buddha said. Yes, it's karma. So that's why you have to do it. Because karma is your own action. So let's say if you say, oh, if I have karma to cure, I will be cured. So I don't want to do anything. But there's something called condition. Cause is there, but you still need to gather the condition. So condition may be taking the medicine if you are sick. So, of course, there is a karma there, and then you need to take the medicine. So maybe when the karma is ripened, then that condition will help to ripen that karma to be free of illness. Mm. Yeah, good point. Thank you. If not, thank you very much, and I'll see you next Sunday.
Thank you.
we should say the dedication prayers.
Definitely.
Begin with the short mandala offering, the first verse, and then the concluding prayer.
Joje mendo dama rera leje nyende gembande sanje jendo mede bwaye dogwe namda jen chebara jo rana mendala ganaya deya me rimbo je maje banaje joje keba nyamba mebaya Kone kondo bewa jo Kudze rabden jen namgara tinle chojuru geba da Lozan tembe dreme sazum je Drove mese tado ne gyoro je Korwe jenga zo benda dewa malu jungwe ne Chere sewa tenzin jazo Shabe sete bado ten juroje Chidara jemba dan kundu sambo teyan dejen Deda gwenje jesu talo jen Gyawa deda tamje rado ngu Gyawa damje je ngowa kala choto ngawad Dage jewe cawa digwenja sambo chuji rado Oh, my God.